Okay, here we go. We are up to Parsha Shemini. Now, Parsha Shemini takes place on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So why is it Shemini? What's the eighth day? It's the eighth day after the Sheva Yimei Milu and the seven inaugural days when we said Moshe function as a Kohen Gadol. Now Aaron takes over. It's Yom HaShemini. Moshe calls Aaron and his sons and tells them to bring special Karbanot as part of the Chanukat HaKohanim. And once they do that, then they will see Kavod Hashem. This is a very interesting idea. First, the Jew has to show some commitment. He has to show his faith. Here would be, let's say, bringing the Karbanot, or Nachshon ben Amnei Adav, what did he do? Jumping in. And then afterwards, you have a Hitkalot Hashem. Then afterwards, you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sometimes you have that in yeshiva also. Guys are waiting to like find God. You have to put an effort. You put an effort, and then there will be reciprocity. For Aaron, he had to bring a chatat and an ola. That was brought. And for Bnei Israel, he had to bring a chatat, an ola, shlamim, and a mincha. Now, Aaron did all the karbonot with his sons. And afterwards, Aaron blessed the people. What blessing do you think that was? What? Berachas Kohanim. That's what Rashi says. We don't know. It doesn't say in the psukim. But Rashi assumes that this was Berachas Kohanim. Aaron blessed the people. Then Moshe and Aaron entered the Mishkan, and when they exited, they blessed again. The blessing again was that the avodah, the korbanot, should be accepted. Okay, that's what we say every day in Ritzei in our Shemona Esrei. Ritzei is we're saying it now that the korbanot, you know, should be brought back, but then it was that the korbanot was accepted. You know, they saw Shemona Esrei in the time of the Beis Hamikdash. It wasn't like, oh, that we should have korbanot. It was that the korbanot should be accepted. Also, there's a connection. Birchat Kohanim, based on this, came around the time of korbanot. That's why we have Birchat Kohanim in our Shemona Esrei after this Ritzei of the Avodah.
And when they exit, they also do it to another time, the Beis
Hamikdash. I didn't hear you.
Oh, sorry. When they exit the Beis Hamikdash.
When they finished doing the karbanot, so they another bracha, and that was at the and this is a tefillah that the. So first, according to Rashi, it was Birchat Kohanim.
Where? Yeah, to
outside to the people, and then they went in and came back out again, and now a new blessing, and that was that everyone's avodah should be accepted. We similarly have this. Okay.
Where are they going?
Into the Mishkan, and then came back out.
Then give the blessing.
Yeah, but the idea is, why are korbanot accepted? What do we say about Kayin and Hevel? What do you learn about Kayin and Hevel? That it depends on the person. Depends on the person. If you're good, your korbanot will be accepted. What do we say in Ritzei, in the Shemona Esrei? Who remembers?
May not be good.
Ba'amcha Yisrael uvitzvilatam. That Kadosh Baruch Hu should be happy with us, and then, if he's happy with us, should be happy with our tzvilot. So that's the idea. Kain and Hevel, and as we'll see over here soon, Nadav and Avihu as well. It really matters about your intention. Okay, fine. They brought the Karbanot, and everyone saw Kavod Hashem. Fire came down from heaven and consumed the Karbanot. Everyone saw it, they fell on their faces. But then we have the tragedy. Nadav and Avihu. Who are Nadav and Avihu?
Sons of Aaron.
Sons of Aaron. They decided to bring a korban. Okay, they bring ketoret. What's the ketoret? The incense. Okay, with an esh zara. Esh zara means a foreign fire. What does that mean? It means they were not commanded to bring this offering, and yet they brought it. And just like with the other korbanot, fire came down from heaven and consumed not the korban, but them. Yeah, so could it, possibly that's what it says in Rashi. Right? So, instead of consuming the korbanot, the fire came and consumed Nadav and Avihu.
Are those only Aaron's kids?
No. No, yeah. Elazar and Itamar. So now.
Why did he do it?
That's what we're going to see. According to the Sifri, and this quoted by the Ibn Ezra, their sin was they entered into the Kodesh Kedashim. And that's why they were punished so severely. The Ramban doesn't accept that. Ramban, what?
Drunk?
We're going to get to that. The Ramban says, hard to believe that Nadav and Avihu would make such a rookie mistake. I mean, they were rookies, though. But look, even Aaron, the Kohen Gadol, How often was he allowed in the Beit HaMikdash, into the Kodesh Kodashim? Once a year. So you really think that they thought they can go in? So Ramban doesn't buy it. And instead, he says, they brought a Ketoret on the Mizbeach Ketoret. That's all fine, but without a tzivoy, without a command. They wanted to reciprocate the love that they felt that God was showing to them. God now, except the carbon of fire came down, everyone's blown away. So, wow, we want to give something back. And while the intentions were great, they weren't commanded, and they should have at least consulted Moshe and Aaron and said, we're thinking of doing this, what do you say? But instead, on their own, they brought this. Moshe had to break the news to Aaron, and he tells him the very famous idea, Bikrovai Akadesh. Kadosh Baruch Hu had said that with the ones that are nearest to me, I will dedicate, sanctify the Mishkan. And according to the Midrash, Moshe said to Aaron, I thought it would be you and me. I thought we were nearest. The fact that they took Nadav and Avihu, and the fact that Kadosh Baruch Hu, you know, killed them, showed that they were on such a high level. What does that mean? It means that a message had to be taught to Bnei Yisrael, that rules are meant to be followed. And here you see, even people with good intentions, if they didn't do what they were commanded to do, it's not okay. It's not okay for you to come up with your own method. This is how I'm going to do it. And therefore, this message had to be taught in a very stark way. Moshe thought it might happen with him and with Aaron. It happened with them. This is one interpretation. Another interpretation is, when Moshe said this to Aaron, what was Aaron's response? Right. His response was he didn't respond. Vayidom Aaron. He was silent. So either he accepted this interpretation that, oh, this needed to be done, and now the message got across, and there needed to be this sacrifice, sacrificial lamb, and, you know, now the rest, everyone's going to take the Mishkan more seriously. There was a time, I was telling guys earlier in the morning, that used to be in the old days, Rabbeinu would chuck a few guys by Sukkos just to send the message home. Certain things would not be tolerated.
Now it didn't change.
Okay, now it waits. Okay. But it used to be by Sukkos, there would be a few sacrificial lambs so that people would realize the rules are the rules. And if you break the rules, you're out. Now he's softened a little bit.
Yeah, but
okay.
I ruined the kitchen.
Well, how did Moshe, what did he exactly say?
According to this midrash that Rashi brings down, it said, Bikrovaya Kadesh. Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to sanctify the Mishkan through those he's closest with. And he thought that, you know, to send the message about how severe it is to follow the rules, who are the closest? I thought it would be you and me, but it was your sons. What a privilege. Right? What a privilege. Okay, that's one interpretation. Another, give me 1 second. Another is that Aaron couldn't fathom why this happened, but he still accepted because he had bitachon Hashem. And this is a very important idea. Having faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not just during the good times. Oh, my stock's up. Everyone I know is healthy. You know, I love God. I believe in God. And then once there's a bump in the road, wow, man, there can't be a God. Right? God would never let this terrible thing happen. We believe in Hashem through the good times and through the difficult times. And Aaron didn't understand it. Rabbeinu will often speak about the Holocaust and say, no one could understand it. But God doesn't owe us any answers. Right? He doesn't owe us any answers. Racheli Frankel, who spoke here like a couple of weeks ago, she said the exact same thing that her Rabbeinu told her about the Holocaust. She said about her own son. Said, God doesn't answer to me. Faith means I believe in God even when I don't get it. Aaron was Racheli Frankel, right? He lost 2 sons. Can't understand why. Okay? With Aaron, it's even worse. Racheli Frankel, you could say, some people exercise their free will to be vicious people and kill little boys. Okay? God gave free will. Unfortunately, free will means that people can use it for good and for evil. So that's terrible. With Aaron's sons, fire came down and consumed them. Can't blame anyone else. Straight from God. I don't understand it, but I still believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is Vayidom Aaron. I always find it fitting that on Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaShoah, we have a moment of silence. people sit there, oh, it's goyish. It's goyish.
What is it? I
want to
be there.
We'll have it, right? It's at the after Pesach. Okay? But we see Vayidum Aaron right over here. Vayidum Aaron is, I accept. I'm quiet. I accept God's judgment. I don't understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I accept God's judgment. And now I do the most that I can to continue with my life and to honor their memory. Okay? Yes.
Is that why it's done the silence? Because I thought it would just be a copy of the Torah in English. We did that.
It might be. It might be that's the reason. I'm saying me personally, I don't have a problem with it because Aaron did it before anyone else did it. Right? Vayidum Aaron. He stood quietly and it was an acceptance. Right? It wasn't why? How did it happen? It's an acceptance. Tio, you wanted to say something before? Absolutely. Absolutely. Moshe,
we,
yeah.
We don't have also an obligation to, like, not an obligation, but to feel sad and to.
Absolutely.
Also after
absolutely.
But he seemed, did he? Or?
I don't know. It doesn't say he didn't. He accepted it. He didn't ask questions. That they mourned, they mourned. We'll see in a moment. But it was an acceptance. We do that every funeral. We do something called Tzidik Adin. We accept it. We say a special Kaddish at the funeral that is sort of what we say at the Siyum about that, oh, there'll be Imot Mashiach, there's not the end, but we accept it. Okay. Moshe then asks his cousins, Mishael and El Tzafan, to remove the bodies from the Mishkan. He didn't want to ask Aaron and his two remaining sons, Eleazar and Tamar, because that would make them tameh. So he asks Mishael and El Tzafan to remove the bodies from the Mishkan, bury them outside of the Machane. Aaron and his sons were commanded not to mourn and should instead continue with the Avodah. This is a very hard thing. Now you should know, this is the din of a Kohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol, he becomes subservient to the people and he's not allowed to mourn. And the Mefarshim say that Aaron's sons on this first day, when they were anointed and they're like sworn in, they had the din of a Kohen Gadol, and they were all basically, says so the Rashbam's view, that they all had the din of a Kohen Gadol on that day. Bnei Yisrael will mourn instead. Instead of you, Bnei Yisrael would mourn the death of your relatives, but you guys have to continue because your job is more important. You have to continue to function. I remember when Bibi Netanyahu was prime minister and his father passed away. So he was sitting Shiva. But there were things that had to go on, you know, in the state. And every so often, he'd be called sort of out of the Shiva, consult with people in this other room, then go back and sit Shiva. You know, because there are certain decisions that are that can't just wait a week sometimes. So, okay. What? I guess if, first of all, probably if you're the prime minister, a lot of things you're doing is pikuach nefesh. And so pikuach nefesh is docha everything. So it's certainly docha Shiva.
He's Jewish.
Bibi Netanyahu?
Oh, I didn't know.
Yes.
He's religious.
No, he's not necessarily religious, but most Jews still sit Shiva, even if, you know, they're not necessarily religious. And also, I don't know how to judge anyone's religiosity. Okay? Now, God instructed Aaron that if anyone does avoda while they're drunk, the avoda is disqualified, and they are liable for death. They're chayv misa. This is what Ari was saying before, based on the juxtaposition of this commandment right after the death of Aaron. So there are those who want to say that was their sin. Because again, everyone's trying to figure out, what did they do that was so terrible? Oh, they came in drunk. That's what they did. Yes, what do you want to say?
But in every other time, when like Hashem's chayv misa, he doesn't come himself to kill the person.
Yeah. But again, what happens is sometimes you look at this case and you say, doesn't seem like the punishment fits the crime. So other mefarshim is, I think, in the Midrash, probably about 7 or 8 different reasons why they died. Because people look at it and they go, they had good intentions. They brought a carbon to God. It wasn't a avodah zarah. Chai misa? Like, it seems extreme. So you have other, you know, I said before they should have consulted Moshe and Aaron. Says, oh, they were paskening halacha of Nei Rabo. People come with all sorts of different ideas. Oh, they didn't get married. There's a whole bunch of different ideas. Okay? So over here, this is one idea that's brought down. Rashi brings this down. Someone else, Benny, wants to say something a second ago? Now, Rav Simcha Bunim, one of the great Hasidic masters, he says about this, our job is to find joy in the avoda, and we don't need external stimulus. My son once pointed out to me, I don't think it's his own idea, but people get wasted on Purim because they say, I have to. It says in the Gemara, Chai v'inish l'vesumi b'puria ad d'lo yada ben arahamim l'baruch Mordechai. But he says, Chai v'inish l'vesumi b'puria. Person has to be intoxicated with Purim. B'puria. Purim should get you intoxicated. Not wine, not alcohol. I should be high on the chag. That's what Simcha Bunim is saying. I shouldn't need external stimuli. I should be able to get into it. And you guys have all had it here this time in yeshiva. There are sometimes guys have come over to me and said, this singing was so amazing, or this was so amazing. I felt a high spiritually without any external thing. Right? This is what Simcha Bunim is saying. Maybe this is the instructions. You had your hand up?
There's a bit if you're about to go on to it, about being Aaron spoken to. You're about to,
yeah. Like, yeah, Moshe instructed, yes, Baruch. Is the Rashbam's view.
What about?
He wasn't a Kohen yet, no.
Even though he wasn't
son,
was he still able to, like, was he able to go bury them?
This was his, I mean, these were his uncles.
No, I'm saying, was he able to,
I don't know. Moshe just asked Levium to do it. I don't know, you're right. He didn't have a din of a Kohen. Moshe didn't ask him. I don't know. I don't know how old he was at this time either. Right? This is the beginning of the 40 years. I have no idea how old he was at this time. Yeah. He didn't tell Aaron. He said, any Kohen who does the Avoda when intoxicated, the Avoda is possible and he's Chayav Misa. Death, yeah. Now, Moshe instructed Aaron and his sons to eat from the Karbanot, even though they're in a state of Aninus. When are you in Onin? From when to when? Death until burial. Okay, at that time, you're Pater from Mitzvahs. They should not be eating from... So, again, their status was like overriding any usual din. Said, even though they were technically onanim, said they should eat from the karbanot. They ate from the karban mincha and the shlamim, but they didn't eat from the karban chatas. Okay, the karban chatas went to Rashi was the chatas for Rosh Chodesh. When Moshe found out they didn't eat from it, he got very upset. They just took it and they burnt it, and it was burnt totally on the mizbeach. Sort of like we do with the carbon oil, they did with the carbon chattas. Moshe got upset at them. Aaron responded that while he understood the instructions to eat covered the special carbon oil that were brought that day, because today was Yom HaShemini, the inauguration day, it shouldn't cover a carbon that's lidorot. Every Rosh Chodesh, I have to bring the carbon chattas in Rosh Chodesh. So he didn't think that that this special din now would override a regular every Rosh Chodesh carbon, only the special carbonot. When Moshe heard that, Moshe said, wow, that makes sense. Not the way I thought about it originally, but I hear you. That's very good. Says Reb Tzadok of Lublin, this was the first machlokas, Torah Shebal Peh. Yeah, because the Torah did not explicitly say it. What is Torah Shebal Peh? Trying to figure out what's the Ratzon Hashem. Moshe and Aaron had a machlokas, how to understand what Ratzon Hashem was. Did it include all the karbanot, Moshe's view, or only the special karbanot, Aaron's view? After Aaron explained his side, Moshe said, I accept that. So this is the first machlokas Torah Shabbat, Kohen Torah Tzadok. Very cool. Baruch, what do you want to say?
No.
Okay, yeah.
Do you think another Israel is buried in the desert or brought to Israel?
I don't know. There probably is a Midrash that says something about it. I don't know. Yeah.
The Kohenim ate only one of the karbanot?
They ate two of the special karbanot, but not the third that was brought in every Rosh Chodesh. Remember I told you that this was Rosh Chodesh Nisan.
Yeah.
Every Rosh Chodesh Nisan, you have to bring Karban Chatas. Okay. And they didn't eat that one. So they didn't eat from the Karban Chata.
Why?
So Aaron figured that the only rule that I had to eat now when I'm an Onain is on the special Karbanot.
Oh.
But this is every Rosh Chodesh you have to eat from the Karbanot. So then I should have the regular din of an Onain where I don't eat from Karbanot when I'm an Onain.
What
is this? Shlamim, Mincha, and Chata. Okay. Gemara in Brachos says, just like the Mizbeach brings kapara, brings atonement, so does your shulchan. The shulchan that you eat on. And everyone had to hear the phrase, shulchan dome lemizbeach. The shulchan's like a mizbeach. Whenever my kids were little and they'd sit on the table, I go, yo, shulchan dome lemizbeach. You want to be a korban? Get off the table. Okay? So there you go. Shulchan dome lemizbeach. This is our transition from these laws now into the laws of kashrus. Okay? The parsha now transitions, moves into kashrus and shmini. Maybe we're talking about the importance of discipline. Okay? What's the first mitzvah that's given to Adam HaRishon? Kashrus. Eat from these trees and don't eat from that tree. Okay? There's another idea that people talk about kashrus, that it's to keep separation between the Jews and the nations of the world. There are lots of different reasons. Whatever the reasons are, we have to keep them. Okay? It's a chok. So now let me tell you some of these ideas, and I'll tell you a beautiful idea in a second. Gemara says, ma'acholot asurot, forbidden foods, mevi litzumtum halev, brings to a stopping up, a clogging of your heart. Okay. Now, according to the Ramban, and according to the Aruch Chaim, it is either a spiritual or an intellectual weakness that happens to you if you eat non-kosher. So those of you who ate non-kosher before in your life, if you felt you weren't so spiritually attached or it's difficult for you to understand things, this might be the reason. Okay? There's some sort of spiritual, intellectual weakness that occurs. The Maharit disagrees and says the Torah is not a medical book. Rather, the non-compliance with the command of God is what brings to the Timtum Halev. Right? This is similar to Shimshon. Did Shimshon lose his strength because his hair was cut? Or did Shimshon lose his strength because he told Delilah what his secret was and then his hair was cut? Right? Was it he violated his Naziris? Or was it in the hair? Right? Is it a din in the hair? Or in breaking with his Naziris? Here as well. Is it, well, the food messes you up? Or the non-compliance? What's the nafkamina? Let's say you ate it non-kosher b'shogeg. You ate non-kosher b'ones. Well, if it's, you know, shogeg, unintentional, ones, against your will. If it's the food, so if I accidentally ingested poison, it doesn't matter that I made a mistake. Oh, I couldn't read what it said. I don't really speak Hebrew. I didn't understand what it said on there. That raal, you know. Oh, you didn't understand the skull with the little things. Okay, fine. I don't read pictures either, you know. So you drank the poison. So I'm sorry you're an idiot, but you're still going to ingested poison, you know. If you don't get your stomach pumped, you'll probably die. So, but if you say it's non-compliance, well, this person did it by accident. So nothing would happen to him. So like I said, this is a machlokas, which would have a nafkamina. Animals that aren't kosher. So the Torah tells us there are simanim. What are the simanim? It has to have complete split hooves and chew its cud. And then exceptions are given. Okay? Exceptions are given of certain animals that have one of the two. Now, we're not exactly sure of the translations, but generally they are referred to as the camel, the hyrax, which is like a mountain badger, and the hare. They all chew their cud. Even though they don't have split hooves, they're not kosher. Which animal has split hooves but doesn't chew its cud? The pig. Now, the Klei Yakar says a very beautiful idea. The Klei Yakar is a beautiful drasha. The Klei Yakar says, if you have half the simanim, one out of two is worse than having zero simanim. And he gives a drasha. He says it's like a hypocrite. An individual that draws attention to his good deeds but refuses to eliminate his bad traits. Right? And he says, look how good I am in this. And he totally rejects the fact that he's messing up in all these other things. So sometimes he could actually be a bad influence. You might think, oh, this is a person I can hang out with, but he's not. Yeah, Rabino might say that, yes. Now, yes, sir. Please.
Why we have lots of kashrus. And because a lot of them relate to food hygiene, and there's a lot of things you can and can't eat, so it's for protecting us in the wilderness by telling us what food you can and can't eat. It's our eternal covenant back to
us. This is an idea that a lot of people have said. It's problematic, though. because there's so much unhealthy kosher food. Right? He said that it's a hygiene thing. It's to keep us away from things that are
then,
not healthy.
Back then it was a hygiene thing.
Okay.
I mean, my mom works with non-Jews. They said sometimes they buy kosher meat just because they think it's healthier.
Yeah. I'm just saying, we eat chopped liver. There's nothing healthy about that. It might be very good. Yeah, I'm just saying it's not. Okay, whatever. I'm just saying it doesn't necessarily make it. What?
There's also vitamin D. There's also potassium.
Good. You sound like, you know, this comedian saying, what's wrong with cake? It's got milk in it, eggs in it. It's got a lot of good things in it. Yes. Okay. Yes.
I heard that whenever we eat kosher meat, like the way shakti is, the way they don't feel any pain.
That all might be good. But the question now is, so why not shecht non-kosher animals also the same way?
Because they don't suppose those in
sugar. I'm just saying, right? Now, listen to this beautiful idea. Salman, you're going to love this idea. You ready? Water-based animals. What are the things that you need in order for it to be kosher? Good. Fins and scales.
But if it has scales and the fins fell out, or is the other one...
Okay, so the Gemara says any fish with scales has fins. Okay? So in other words, if let's say you found half a fish, so you would know, it has scales. So then it had fins, you just don't have that part of the animal. Good. Now the question would be, so why the need for both? I mean, like, just say... has scales. Because we just said, any fish that has scales is going to be kosher because it has fins. So why is there a need to even tell me scales and fins, right? So just tell me, the fish got scales, it's kosher. Right? Pretty obvious question. Listen to a beautiful idea of Lubavitcher Rebbe. Okay? Beautiful idea. It says like this, with scales. Scales represent armor, protection, integrity, that man will be save himself from pitfalls. A man with integrity won't cheat in business, won't cheat on his wife, won't lie to a friend, even though temptations are there. His integrity and morality transcend his desires. That's the armor. That's the scales. What are fins? Fins represent movement, ambition, knowing your strengths and wanting to utilize them, fulfill your dreams and leave an impression on the world, which is important. But, yeah, fins represent movement, ambition, knowing your strengths, and wanting to utilize them, fulfilling your dreams, and leaving an imprint on the world, which is important. But, says the Rebbe, if you only have fins without scales, ambition without integrity, well, that leads to scandals. Right? You have all the people that just, I need to get ahead, I need to get ahead at any cost. So, we are taught every fish with scales have fins. If you make sure that you have integrity, if you have morality, we will also succeed in developing fins for improving the world. But first and foremost, you need to work on your morality and your integrity, and the fins will be there. Because any fish with scales has fins, and you will be able to leave your impact. Isn't that a beautiful idea of Lubavitcher Rebbe? I had heard this many years ago when I was preparing this. I kept looking. I need to put this in there. And until I found it, I wasn't happy. You know, but I found it, Baruch Hashem. I remember hearing this so many years ago and loving it. Yes?
So, how do you call the protection?
The scales.
Scales, okay.
Yeah.
And
the fins. In Hebrew, it's called snapir v'kaskeset. Snapir are the fins, kaskeset are the scales.
Okay.
Now, with birds, there are 19 tameh birds listed in the Torah. In the Gemara, there are 24, because they just weren't sure about certain birds. They said, this bird that we call this is for sure not kosher. So they just added, like they weren't sure about some. So the list goes to 24, but it's not like they added, it's just they weren't sure which some of the birds that are listed there. The Shulchan Aruch says, if we can't identify them, we can't eat it unless we have a mesorah. If you have a mesorah, that this has always been eaten. This is considered a kosher bird. Let's say like chicken. Chicken's been, for centuries, people say, we eat chicken. So chicken's a kosher bird. But you should know, for example, I'll get to you in a second. Rav Schechter, who was just here like last week, doesn't eat turkey. He said, there's no Masorah. Jews were not living in America. They came to the United States. There were no turkeys in Europe. They came to the United States. They find turkeys. And they said, so most Jews say, turkey, it's like from the chicken family. Rav Schachter said there's no Masor on turkey. He won't eat turkey.
Would you?
I would eat turkey. I eat turkey. But I'm saying Rav Schachter doesn't. He says there's no Masorah. So like I said, the majority of the world eats it. It says the chicken family. But I'm saying Rav Schachter says, I could live without turkey. I personally don't like turkey, but I eat in yeshiva, whatever they feed me. What? Masorah means a tradition. Right? It was like passed down from your father and his father and his father. So this is what we always ate. You have the same thing I'll get to in a second with locust. There's certain types of locusts that are kosher. Teimanim, yeah, teimanim. I don't know if all Sfarim, but teimanim have a Masorah. What? Those locusts are that are kosher.
Very grasshoppers.
Right, it's a type of, yeah, locust and grasshoppers. Yes, it's a family. Okay. The Ramban says the birds that are not kosher are vicious birds of prey, and eating them will influence your character. And you can say the same thing about land animals. Yeah?
Ramban,
Nachmanides. Land animals as well. The ones that are kosher are the vegetarians. And you can even tell the difference. Very interesting. It's a weird biological difference. All kosher animals, the milk of kosher animals curdles, and you can make cheese out of it. Non-kosher animals that give milk, and every mammal gives milk, you can't make cheese out of it. Only the kosher animals, the milk curdles. So these are different types of animals. They're vegetarian animals, and they're not vicious. They're not prey. Yeah? You could feed meat to a cow. I know.
I saw something about how you could take the enzyme from the cow and mix it with meat.
That's how you do the curdling. Yeah.
I'm saying they would do that with like it works with non-kosher animals.
Oh, would they be taking the enzyme from the cow? Yes. Okay, fine. But it wouldn't curdle. I mean, it has to be from.
That's not how you do the curdling. That's how you
solidify it. Solidify, right? Well, that's curdling would be you can ordinarily do it, and then you can have an enzyme. I forgot what it's called.
Rennet.
What? Rennet. That was it. I knew that. I used to know this. What? Yeah, they're not. Yeah. So again, the same idea is again expressed that we're influenced by the type of animal that we eat. Is this the only reason? No. These are reasons that are given. In general, with all of these, this is a chok. Chok means it doesn't have reasons. Now, throughout the ages, people tried to give reasons, and it makes it easier for us to accept it if we hear a reason. I'm not. So if someone comes along now and tell me, now there are cows and they're vicious and they're wild. Like, doesn't necessarily mean that the cows now become not kosher. But these are ideas. Yeah.
I just want to say for the sake of the recording,
the English people have mad cow disease. Not, I'm sorry, yeah.
the enzyme itself is called renin and it's used to form
rennet. Thank you. Yes.
It's just like a dumb question, but something I thought of where it's like, how is, like, you can't have milk from a non kosher animal, right?
Right.
So how can a baby have, breast milk? Of humans and kosher.
You're right. This is permitted.
Probably.
I'm eating from a, you know, eating a human being is an Isser Derabana, not the Oraisa.
Really?
Yeah. Right? I'm not saying you should all be cannibals. You know? I'm pretty sure that there's less of an Isser to eat a human being than it is to eat a non kosher animal. But the interesting thing. A friend of mine wrote this book about the Holocaust, and he said it was fascinating. In the worst of situations, people starving, they still would not eat people that died. Like, there are people there. Like, we have psukim in Navi that talk about, like, these mothers, and there's a midrash that talks about that they were eating their children, okay, because the famine was so bad. And he said in the Holocaust, it got the worst of situations, and still people, no one did it. Now, turns out they probably saved their lives because the people were so diseased and they were like malnourished that eating them with all the diseases probably would have hastened their death. But I don't think they knew that. But he said there were certain things that was just like a red line and it just wasn't done. Anyway, I mean, not saying it wasn't ever done, but it was hardly ever done. There were flying insects are usser as well. Except for, let's say, special types of locust, grasshoppers, you were talking about before. Any animal that walks on paws are usser, as are small rodent-type animals that are known in Gemara Shabbos. It's a parak called Shmona Shratzim. Now, usually we think sheretz is like an insect, but shratzim here are like rodents. So, like, examples are like mice and weasels and lizards. And so the purpose of the dietary laws was v'yitim kadoshim, and it's usser to be metame your nefesh, baruch.
If all things that walk on paws are usher, why does it have to mention the hair?
Because it, I don't, because it chews its cud.
Yeah, but it wants some paws.
I know. I'm just saying, whether it chews its cud. So I had one of the two. It's a mention. That's like one of the proofs that God wrote the Torah. Why list the four exceptions? If a human being wrote the Torah, why go out on a limb and list, oh, by the way, there's only four animals that have one of the two. You could so easily be disproven once they bring the fifth and the sixth and the seventh and say, look. So there's no need. If I was a human being trying to fix and fool everybody, you know, that I'm God, I would just give the rules and everyone will know that's not part of the rules. Okay. After discussing Tumat HaNefesh, the parsha ends with Tumat HaGuf and says, anyone who touches a kezayit of a nevela, what's a nevela? A corpse, even from a kosher animal, but it wasn't shechted properly. Okay, the animal just died of old age or was shot or it was shechted improperly. Okay, if you touch a corpse of a nevela, you become tummy. Dead of the Shmona Shratzim, these type of rodents, not insects again, not like you killed a fly or a mosquito, but a dead lizard or mouse, okay? It's Metame Bika Adasha. It's like sizes. Some things are Kazayas, Adasha is another size, not getting into right now, you know, what it is, but that's the size. Man and Kalim become Tame from an Avhatuma. Avhatuma, there's certain things that are in this category. One example would be a Nevela. Okay, Nevela would be an Avatuma. A Kli Cheres, what's a Kli Cheres? Good, earthenware becomes Tame as opposed to everything else if its airspace has something Tame in it. Most other Kalim, let's say I have this cup, and this cup is from metal. If someone Tame touches the outside, it becomes Tame. If I touch the outside of pottery, nothing happens to it. But if, let's say, a dead Cheres falls into the airspace, even if it doesn't touch anything, let's say, I don't know, a spider goes down with its web, holding it, I guess it wouldn't be a Cheres, but something else that could be in within the airspace, I have a large thing, okay? And it goes in the airspace, it becomes tummy. And the only way to make it tahar is, you know, you have to break it, good. Last halacha. Food, in order to become tummy, has to become wet. Seven things that make it wet. Okay, one of them is water. Water, dew. So now, according to that, every single thing that grows out in the field should become tame, right? Because it rains, there's dew. That's true also, but you need to be detached. When it's growing, it can never become tame. Once I detach it, and then I wet it, I spritz it like they do in the grocery store, so your apples look shiny and stuff like that right now. So they spritz it with water, or I leave it out because I want the dew to fall upon it. So that's as if I made it tame. Okay? Then it's called the dew. Those seven liquids make it, there's a whole mesetical makshirin, makes it kosher lekabel tuma. Yeah? Yad shachatam, yes. So Benny was saying before, the seven things. And tahara for a man is, what do you do? A man became tame, what does he have to do? Mikvah. Okay, if he wants to eat truma, is one more step. What do you have to do? After mikvah is the first mishnah in brachos. Anyone learn it? You have to wait until nightfall. Right, which is nightfall. Very good. And if you want to eat, and there's certain other types of tuma, you actually have to bring a korban as well. So there's mechusar tefillah, there's mechusar, you know, till nightfall, and there's mechusar kippurim, certain things like zav. You know, you have to need that. You have to also bring a carbon. So there's certain types of ways that you become tar. And we'll stop over here. Shkayach. What?
Yes.
What?
Fix the clock.
Yes.
Yes.
Here we go.